two new portable Wi-Fi radio devices, which enable people to listen to internet radio wirelessly while walking down the street. Therefore, in order to promote that technology as an opportunity for alternate voices to reach larger audiences, prevent telecommunication corporations from blocking the creation of free public Wi-Fi and WiMAX hotspots in urban and rural areas. I'm going to give the brief overview right now of all the issues, and then I'm going to go back and discuss each issue in greater detail. Fund the creation of more public hotspots. Now, the USA is stuck with an obsolete 100-year-old radio technology, which unnecessarily restricts the number of stations in a region. Modern radio technologies can enable hundreds or even thousands of simultaneous AM/FM broadcasters in the same geographic region, as described by architect of the Internet, David Reed. To read his technical essay in Salon, go to inyourear.org. Promote the development of modern radio technologies. Public funding. Fund and enable non-profit and public domain media channels without political interference vis-a-vis the British BBC model. Eliminate right-wing infiltration of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Licensing. Preserve low-power FM licensing, LPFM, for community FM broadcasters, and ensure that corporate lobbyists will never again be able to override technical evidence in order to suppress community broadcasting. Stop busting pirate radio broadcasters on technically falsified claims of interference with commercial broadcasters and airports. Censorship. What should we do with U.S. classics like Cat on a Hot Tin Roof or The Color Purple? Dig a hole, says Gerald Allen, and dump them in it. Gerald Allen, a pro-censorship, anti-sex activist, has met with President Bush 5 times to discuss these issues. Now, some media observers complain about crass sexual content in the media. One wonders why they don't simply change the channel, until one realizes that there are too few channels out there which don't use sexual titillation to capture viewership and advertising dollars. If the FCC promotes more small and non-profit media outlets, then these viewers will have more alternatives to choose from. However, adult Americans must be assured access to adult-oriented programming if they want it. And I don't mean pornography. Censorship on the basis of sexual content has been used in the past to suppress political, artistic, and educational content. Keep censorship away from pay channels. Respect parents' decisions about their children's viewing options. Preserve uncensored late-night rules for non-pay channels. The sensational news which dominates corporate news channels, such as Janet Jackson's breast, John Bennett, and sexual predator hysteria, was fostered in part by another sensationalist ploy, Republican attacks on Bill Clinton's sex life. Calling on the FCC to stop participating in this phony, politically motivated moral panic with excessive indecency citations. Okay, content, the fairness doctrine. These are just distractions from far-reaching local, domestic, and international issues affecting millions of Americans in their daily lives, like schools in crisis, corporate corruption, government ineptitude, and environmental degradation. Ongoing problems are ignored in favor of fleeting news bites. Real analysis has been replaced with shouting matches. Therefore, reinstate the FCC fairness doctrine dissolved by the Reagan administration. Expand it and vote it into law. Require the reporting of underreported news stories as documented by the UN, Doctors Without Borders, and other sources. Require that analysts from differing perspectives be given ample time to explain their views without interruption. Require civility. Shouting matches and personal attacks should be discouraged. Also present at the FCC hearings were representatives and parents from local primary and from the local primarily Hispanic school, Academia Similas del Pueblo, which was recently criticized on air by local Disney-owned KABC 790 AM radio station by their white supremacist Minuteman show. Subsequent to that broadcast, this primary elementary school began receiving bomb threats and harassment. I'll be interviewing a representative from the school on my show in the near future to read articles giving more details about this situation. Again, go to inyourear.org. So now I'm going to back up and discuss some of these issues in greater detail. But first, I'm going to play some music. Let's see if I can find some good music to listen to. Okay, we're going to listen to a punk indie post-hardcore band from Gainesville, Florida called The Draft. Something to play. Okay. Continuing, on killradio.org. This is Johnny Radio, and I'm going to discuss some information relative to the issue of media consolidation. Okay. First of all, I'm going to read a little bit about the issue of media consolidation from an article in the LA Times. This is from August 5th, 2006. This article was written by Norman Lear, famous writer, producer, and also founder of the People for the American Way. And this article is co-written by Robert McChesney, professor at the University of Illinois and president of Free Press. That's freepress.net. Over the last 25 years, the number of corporations that dominate television, movies, music, radio, cable, and the internet has dwindled from more than 50 to just a handful of massive conglomerates. Do we really want big media to get even bigger? The Federal Communications Commission Chairman Kevin Martin does. He just relaunched the FCC's formal review of media ownership rules. The agency's, quote, further notice of proposed rulemaking, unquote, issued July 25th, is vague, but its intent is clear: to let a few giant media corporations swallow up more local television channels, radio stations, and newspapers in a single market. Again, this article was written, co-written by Norman Lear, one of the most well-known television producers, especially from the 80s and 90s. He did a lot of sitcoms from that time. FCC Chairman Martin's main target is the ban on newspaper broadcast cross-ownership that prohibits one company from owning the major daily newspaper as well as TV and radio stations in the same area. He'd also like to allow one company to own more than one TV station in smaller markets and more than two in the largest cities. A few powerful firms in major cities have won waivers to the ban, or at least delays on enforcement, but those are the exceptions. in Los Angeles, the Tribune Company owns the Los Angeles Times and KTLA TV Channel 5, an arrangement that probably would be affected by Martin's actions. If Martin's changes are approved, one corporation could own the major daily newspaper, 8 radio stations, and 3 television stations in the same town. Furthermore, once the digital television transition is completed in 2009, allowing stations to broadcast multiple signals, one company could control 12 or even 18 television stations in a single city. If Martin gets his way, the last vestiges of local media competition would be swept away, smoothing the way for media company towns in which News Corp, or yes, the Tribune Company, could dominate public discourse. That deja vu you're feeling, and I'm feeling, is because the FCC tried to push through the same rule changes in 2003 under then-Chairman Michael Powell. In response, millions of people, spurred on by groups as diverse as the National Rifle Association and the National Organization for Women, contacted the FCC and Congress to voice their opposition. The FCC approved the rule changes anyway, only to see them nearly overturned by Congress and then rejected by the courts. Despite the overwhelming public opposition, FCC Chairman Martin's latest attempt to eliminate cross-ownership rules is driven by the massive lobbying of a cartel of second-tier big media companies specializing in newspaper and broadcast ownership, such as Gannett, Media General, and Tribune. Their motive, of course, bigger profits. But what's good for media, big media's bottom line isn't always good for the rest of us. The first casualty of media company towns would be journalism. When one firm owns most of a city's news outlets, who needs a bunch of competing newsrooms? Investigative reporting and extensive local coverage requires a costly staff. It's far cheaper to syndicate fare from headquarters than to support a diversity of local voices. If your readers and viewers don't like it, where else are they to go? Once the big chains start selling and swapping their properties to build up larger and larger fiefdoms, the already declining number of independent and minority owners will be further squeezed out. Today, just 1 in 5 daily newspapers are owned by individuals or companies that don't own any other newspapers. According to the most recent FCC data, fewer than 4% of radio stations and 2% of TV stations are owned by minorities. Industry and Wall Street propaganda says local media can't compete without further consolidation. Yet media companies already enjoy higher profit margins than most industries. They say we must deregulate. But radio and TV station ownership is by definition regulated. These are the public airwaves, and there are only so many channels available in a community. The only question is, on whose behalf will Washington make the rules? Major media companies or the public? A broad coalition of public interest organizations at StopBigMedia.com has already directed tens of thousands of comments to the FCC decrying further media consolidation. Like the millions who spoke out 3 years ago, the coalition is saying it does not want the largest media companies to swallow up even more local media outlets. Groups such as Common Cause Free Press and the National Hispanic Media Coalition are organizing town meetings across the country, including one in Los Angeles, which took place on August 31, 2006. FCC Martin has pledged to hold half a dozen official meetings hearings of his own, though he hasn't announced a time or place for any of them yet. Martin's predecessor ignored public opinion at his peril. We hope the new chairman will listen carefully to the voices of his real constituents, the American public. Nothing less than our democracy depends on it. You can get access to this article and more information by going to inyourear.org. Okay, now we're going to learn a little bit about Internet neutrality, and we're going to get this information from YouTube. This is from a PBS Now special on the subject of Internet neutrality.
Capitol Dome behind me, and say it has. Welcome to Now. There was a time when many people at the cutting edge of the Internet revolution would look at that Capitol Dome behind me and say it had little to do with their work. There was a sense in the Silicon Valleys and Silicon Alleys of America that the whole Yahoogle universe, the whole World Wide Web extravaganza, operated in a Wild West frontier, relatively free of government meddling. Well, it doesn't. Congress has the power to redesign the future of the online world, and some power players in this town are working right now to do just that, and not necessarily to your benefit. If you think the internet can be a force for enlightenment and democracy, you need to pay attention. William Brangham produced our report.
Our story about the fight over the online world begins here, the offices of a New York City startup. As you can see, the corridors are not yet bustling, but it's just possible this could become home to the next big thing on the internet.
We run the risk of being undercut by like a Google video.
These four have started a website called Blip.tv. They're hoping to ride the latest dot-com boom, the making and sharing of videos on the web.
I thought I'd serenade you all with a little song that I wrote a few minutes ago.
The videos on Blip.tv tend to be homemade. You can watch this man's tour of public housing in New Orleans. Or there's this cooking show done by a young couple in their apartment. And over here, politics. Footage from a recent political rally in Boston. It's like a video flea market, and there's no doubt the reason a company like this even has a chance is that the internet gives anyone connected a level playing field. You can watch a video from Blip just as easily as online video from a giant like MSNBC.com.
You know what? Use this. This is going to do better for you.
Blip's founder, Mike Hudak, says sites like his are doing an end run around big media.
We live in the golden age of democracy, the golden age of small-d democracy, if you like, because anybody can create a piece of video or a piece of audio or even text that reflects their thinking, and they can get that out to millions of people and potentially influence millions of people without having to go through any filters at all.
But Hudak is worried that small-d democracy is about to get clobbered.
Right now, Congress is being pressured to let the telephone and cable companies rewrite the basic rules of how the internet works. The companies insist these changes are needed for the internet to continue its meteoric growth. But critics say these changes could destroy the internet's most important benefit to society, the easy flow of new ideas.
That's pretty much it.
Craig Aaron is with Free Press, a media watchdog group in Washington. They're part of a diverse chorus that is sounding the alarm about what they see as a frontal assault on the free and open internet which we have today.
One of the beauties of the internet is that it's been open to views across the political spectrum. And if you hand the control of the information so that some can be preferred over others, you're going to be handing back that control to the big media companies.
You are listening to Kill Radio.
Already control our television, airwaves, radio, you name it.
Give me a moment here to make the current architecture of all this perfectly clear. There is you on your computer, sexy devil. In most cases, the web flows into your computer through wires that are controlled by a handful of big telecom companies, the bells like AT&T and Verizon, or the cable giants like Comcast and Time Warner. The companies control these pipes, and they charge fees to anyone who wants to use them. But the deal is they can't mess around with what flows through the pipes. They're supposed to be impartial, hands-off middlemen. You want to email grandma? Well, knock yourself out. You want to build a website called TomDelayGotARawDeal.com? Well, go for it. Everyone's websites are treated the same, whether it's owned by you or owned by tycoons like Bill Gates or Rupert Murdoch. This has been one of the ground rules of the internet since day one. Some call it net neutrality.
I think network neutrality is just a sort of a fancy engineer's word for internet freedom. It's basically the idea that all data is treated equally, and the user makes the decisions as to which data they download, what websites they visit, what they watch and read online.
Aaron says big telecom companies have declared open season on net neutrality. He says that for the first time, the cable and phone companies want to step in and dictate which websites will run better than others. How would they do that? The companies want to set up a guaranteed fast lane on the internet, but that fast lane wouldn't be for everyone. Only the websites that pay a hefty fee get the speedier service.
What the cable and telephone companies are proposing is essentially erecting a toll booth right in the middle to direct traffic, create an express lane for the products and services that they own, and leave everybody else on a winding dirt road.
Aaron doesn't begrudge the telecom industry for wanting to make money, and it is fair to say consumers would very much like to get TV shows and movies via the web that look sharp and are bigger than a business card on their screen. But their chosen business model for this upgrade requires the telephone and cable companies to drive a stake through the heart of network neutrality. And the industry has deployed a small army of lobbyists here in D.C. to do just that. They've spent millions of dollars covering Washington in recent weeks with ads ridiculing this neutrality idea.
Regulate something that hasn't been built to solve a problem that doesn't exist? Why would we do that? The big online companies want the next...
They argue that some of neutrality's strongest supporters, web giants like Google and Yahoo and Microsoft, are going to continue making a fortune off the Internet, but are trying to skip out on paying to upgrade the network.
They're going to make billions. But they don't want to pay anything. Instead, they want to stick consumers with the whole bill. And they call their plan net neutrality?
The problem is that the Internet that we built to date is getting a little creaky. And without significant new investment, we're not going to be able to manage that traffic. So the question is, as we build this Internet of the future, who's going to pay for it?
Mike McCurry, yes, that Mike McCurry, Bill Clinton's former spokesman, is now explaining things for the telecom industry. His PR firm helped set up this group called Hands Off the Internet. They made those ads. They argue that net neutrality is standing in the way of progress.
It's just, by the way, the same reason why we take 18-wheeler semi-trailers and make them pay more in federal highway taxes than someone who drives their family in a minivan, because they are putting more load onto the infrastructure and therefore should pay a higher.
Okay, welcome back, listeners. We're in the middle of listening to a PBS Now production on net neutrality. We're going to take a little break from that to listen to a track from DJ Miyuki's MySpace. To hear it, you go to myspace.com/MIYUKI_DJ. That's MIYUKI_DJ. This track is called Unforgiving Dreams. The producer is Manufactura. Okay, having a little technical delay here. Please stay tuned. This is killradio.org. I'm Johnny Radio. And we're going to get started very shortly. A little drum and bass from DJ Miyuki. As soon as the darn thing loads.
Thank you.
Don't go away, listeners. We're just dealing with usual slowdown in the internet because we have this cheap-ass slow connection. I'm Johnny Radio. Please go to inyourear.org for lots of information. Inyourear.org is a great hub to get to articles and action alerts for on a variety of media consolidation issues. Okay.
Democratic Congressman Ed Markey says this is about a lot more than just money.
This is really a debate over monopoly, over control, versus the ideas of even the smallest person being given access to every person in our country.
Kill her now!
Markey says the money
get me down!
Red herring. You think the Googles of the world don't pay heavily to connect to that pipe? And what about what you pay every month to get that pipe into your house?
So the Bells simplify this argument as though it's between them and some other very large company. But it's not. It's really about them, the Bells, and millions of companies and individuals around the country who have used the web as a way to reinvent not only the economy but free speech as it's expressed in our country.
Markey's greatest concern is that once the telephone and cable companies can pick and choose who gets through those pipes the quickest and who doesn't, they're in a position to potentially shape who the winners and losers are in everything from political debates to competing technologies. He says net neutrality can stop that from happening.
Net neutrality is an essential part of the constitution of the Internet. It was built into, baked into, the very fabric of the Internet from day one. And now the Bells are trying to amend that constitution. And that's too dangerous. That's too high a price for the whole country to have to pay.
And Markey is not alone. A group called Save the Internet has become the umbrella organization for a growing chorus defending net neutrality. And it is quite an umbrella. Left-wing bloggers and progressive voices such as MoveOn.org, alongside, are you sitting down, Gun Owners of America, and just recently, the Christian Coalition. All these varied groups have expressed that fear. If you give mostly unchecked authority over the Internet to a few corporations, who knows whose data or whose ideas will be allowed through? I asked Walter McCormick, the head of the U.S. Telecom Association, about that fear.
There are a chorus of critics who are very concerned that the people who own the pipes, who pass this Internet data through, would be able to discriminate against some websites, for instance, or be able to push others, promote others.
We have said that in our industry, we will not block, impair, or degrade content, applications, services. So the experience that a consumer has today with the Internet, a consumer will have in the future.
McCormick says the companies he represents are in the business of making money, and if consumers want to visit a given website, the telecom companies have every interest in letting that website through. He says the idea that they'd somehow restrict access to certain websites is overblown.
It's very difficult to deal with what-ifs and hypotheticals. There are enough problems in the country for Congress to deal with that are real problems, as opposed to worrying about what-if scenarios.
But it is not all hypothetical. In 2005, a small phone company in North Carolina blocked their internet customers from using a rival web-based phone service. The Federal Communications Commission said ixnay and fined them $15,000. That same year, the Canadian telephone giant TELUS blocked their web customers from seeing a site that was supportive of union workers who had a beef with TELUS. And just this year, America Online was accused of blocking emails from a group that were waging a campaign critical of AOL. McCormick argues these are isolated examples, and he points out that we already have a watchdog in Washington, the FCC, that's promised to make sure these kinds of problems are rooted out.
The Federal Communications Commission has said that it has sufficient authority to disallow any company from blocking, impairing, degrading any kind of application or service.
But advocates of net neutrality say websites don't have to be blocked or degraded to suffer from second-class treatment. Give the newest, fastest online service to a select few websites that have paid for the privilege, goes the argument, and what you build in is an unfair advantage for the richest, most powerful companies.
If they're allowed to get rid of network neutrality, then they can favor Verizon Video or AT&T phone service or the new Comcast search engine over anything that I come up with, even if my product is better, even if I'm offering it for a lower price. By manipulating what happens over the network, they're allowed to favor their own content and those of their partners, and that means everybody else is left behind.
It's really not about the Googles and the Yahoos of today. It's about the Googles and the Yahoos of the future. It's about the next Sergey Brin. It's about the next Jerry Yang. It's about the next Bill Gates.
Remember Mike Hudak and his fledgling video sharing company called Blip.tv? And he doesn't have the cash yet to hire big lobbyists, but he believes his big idea's only chance of flying is if he gets the same crack at the Internet as his competition, big or small.
Without net neutrality, there's a good chance that a lot of small businesses will have very slow web pages. It won't be their fault. But the consumers, at the end of the day, won't know that. They'll just think that the business doesn't have their act together.
The big telephone and cable companies have made very clear that they intend to do this. All of their CEOs have come out and said, we're going to build our model based on discrimination. They've said it again and again and again, and yet they want us to believe that they're not going to do it. Well, there's no reason to believe it.
Internet activists haven't given up yet. They've been holding rallies to show Congress that net neutrality has popular support. But this year, industry has momentum in its favor, with lots of friends in Congress and a well-oiled campaign to push legislators in their direction and away from net neutrality.
Jared, this is Justin. Give me a call when you get a chance. We have some bandwidth issues.
The end of last week, the Blip.tv folks were having some growing pains. They just signed up some environmental groups to post their video on Blip's site, and the sudden surge of traffic overwhelmed their own computers, an embarrassment of riches in a way. But they got it fixed in time, and other riches came their way. Investors came through with some much-needed cash. Perhaps Blip.tv has a chance.
To being around for over a year and
over a year.
And revenue already.
To being profitable.
To profitability.
Historians will look upon this era as a time when power and discourse are moving from a few centralized locations controlled by a few companies to everyone. And it's a beautiful thing. And without net neutrality, we run a very serious risk of losing that.
That was a piece from PBS Now called Net Neutrality. You can hear that again if you go to inyourear.org. This is Johnny Radio. The part about here's to profit or whatever they were toasting Kill Radio is a nonprofit organization. However, speaking as Johnny Radio, not representing Kill Radio necessarily, I support small business. And I support laws and regulations and policies which enable small businesses to operate on an equal footing with large corporations. And that's very much what the issue of net neutrality is about. I'm going to take another musical break, a musical interlude. We're going to listen to DJ Swamp. This is a piece called Wheatgrass and Razors. DJ Swamp on killradio.org. DJ Swamp. You can check out his website. DJ Swamp has actually played two shows for Kill Radio, most recently at Safari Sam's, and before that he did a show for Kill Radio at the Cannibal Flower Party, which you can find online, cannibalflower.com, Cannibal Flower Art Party, and you can check out his MySpace page at myspace.com/DJ Swamp. Okay, we're going to continue now with our discussion of media consolidation and ways to take action, ways to get more information. Last piece was discussion of internet neutrality. Now we're going to talk about technology. The role of technology in promoting internet or media consolidation, or ways to use technology to lower barriers of entry to small and nonprofit media producers, ways to use technology to level the playing field. There are now on the market at least two portable Wi-Fi radio devices which enable people to listen to internet radio, such as killradio.org, wirelessly while walking down the street. One of these is a product called the the infusion created by a company called Torian. You can find out about the Torian, the infusion radio, at torian.com.au. That's Torian, TORIAN.com.au. Torian has developed the world's first truly portable compact internet radio. The Infusion allows users to listen to any radio station in the world that streams through the World Wide Web without the need for a computer. Its compact and stylish design around the size of a business card allows maximum portability to travelers and those stationed abroad who want to stay in touch with local news, sports, and music. The Infusion is a Wi-Fi device. If you're familiar with Wi-Fi, probably many of our listeners have Wi-Fi in their homes, which is a way of providing a wireless connection to a computer network, which many folks use in Starbucks coffee. There are a lot of public Wi-Fi hotspots in the world. There's one in Bryant Park in New York City, for example. You can sit down on the grass, pull out your laptop, and connect to the internet. Well, if you have this product from Torian called the Infusion, then you can sit down on the grass in Bryant Park and tune in to Kill Radio without a computer. Just turn on your Infusion. You can walk down the street in certain parts of Los Angeles and plug in to internet radio and listen to internet radio without a computer. The maximum usefulness of this product, from Torian, depends on the existence of Wi-Fi hotspots. This is especially relevant where there are free public Wi-Fi hotspots, which exist in many cities. However, there is a problem, which is that large telecom companies have fought against the creation of free public Wi-Fi hotspots. You can get more information about this product as well as this issue by going to inyourear.org. I'm going to read a little piece now from O'Reilly.com, or rather onlamp.com or O'Reilly.net. You can get the article by going to inyourear.org. As you may know, the slumbering dragon known as the telecoms industry in the U.S. has finally woken up to wireless community networking and has begun to lobby the various state governments to protect them, the telecoms, particularly against municipal plans for free wireless networking, such as those put forward in the writer's hometown, Philadelphia. The writer is Shiler Earle. The Consumers Union have put up a website at hearusnow.org to help people send a clear and direct message to the decision makers in state government that wireless networking offers the potential to linking communities, encourage the spread of broadband, and perhaps even bridge the digital divide. Whether you live in Pennsylvania or not, now is the time to stand up for wireless community networking. Large telecoms are trying to prevent the creation of free public hotspots, which would enable people to connect to the internet with their laptop or even with an Infusion wireless internet radio. This is one way in which large telecoms are trying to block consumers from getting access to internet radio, internet television, internet media production. You can learn how to take action on this issue by going to inyourear.org. Okay, now we're going to talk about our radio technology. The USA is stuck with an obsolete 100-year-old radio technology, which unnecessarily restricts the number of stations in a region. Modern radio techniques can enable hundreds or even thousands of simultaneous broadcasters in the same region, as described by architect of the Internet, David Reed. I'm going to read now from an article in Salon.com written by David Weinberger. This article is called The Myth of Interference. Internet architect David Reed explains how bad science created the broadcast industry. This was written in March 2003. There's a reason our television sets so outgun us, spraying us with trillions of bits while we respond only with the laughable trickles from our remotes. To enable signals to get through intact, the government has divided the spectrum of frequencies into bands, which it then licenses to particular broadcasters. NBC has a license, and you don't. Thus, NBC gets to bathe you in Friends, followed by a very special Scrubs, and you get to sit passively on your couch. It's an asymmetric bargain that dominates our cultural, economic, and political lives. Only the rich and famous can deliver their messages, and it's all based on the fact that radio waves in their untamed habitat interfere with one another, which is why the FCC must provide licenses to these sliced-up channels. Except, these channels don't interfere with each other. Interference is a metaphor that paints an old limitation of technology as a fact of nature. So says David P. Reed, electrical engineer, computer scientist, and one of the architects of the Internet. If he's right, then spectrum is not a resource to be divvied up like gold or parceled out like land. It's not even a set of pipes with their capacity limited by how wide they are, or an aerial highway with white lines to maintain order. Spectrum is more like the colors of the rainbow, including the ones our eyes cannot discern. Says Reed, there's no scarcity of spectrum, any more than there's a scarcity of the color green. We could instantly hook up to the Internet everyone who can pick up a radio signal, and they could pump through as many bits as they could ever want. We'd go from an economy of digital scarcity to an economy of digital abundance. So, throw out the old rule book on what should be regulated and shouldn't. Rethink completely the role of the Federal Communications Commission in deciding who gets allocated what. If Reed is right, nearly a century of government policy on how to best administer the airwaves needs to be reconfigured from the bottom up. Spectrum as color seems like an ungainly metaphor in which to hang a sweeping policy change with such important social and economic implications. But Reed will tell you it's not a metaphor at all. Spectrum is color. It's the literal honest to Feynman truth. That's a reference to David Feynman. Richard Feynman. David Reed is many things, but crackpot is not one of them. He was a professor of computer science at MIT, then chief scientist at Software Arts during its VisiCalc days, and then the chief scientist at Lotus during its 123 days. But he's probably best known as the co-author of the paper that got the Internet's architecture right, End-to-End Arguments in System Design. Again, you can get access to this article by going to inyourear.org. You may recognize David Reed as the author of what's come to be known as Reed's Law, which says the true value of a network isn't determined by the number of individual nodes it connects, Metcalfe's Law, but by the far higher number of groups it enables. Okay, I'm going to try to skip ahead to something we can all understand, because this goes into metaphor laid on top of arcane technology. Okay, here's an example of a pinhole. Here's an example of a pinhole camera. One second, please. Okay, if a camera obscura, if a room is sealed against light except for one pinhole, an image of the outside will be projected against the opposite wall. If photons interfered with one another as they squeezed through that tiny hole, we wouldn't get a clear image on that back wall. Okay. The next show has arrived here at Kill Radio, so we're going to go out with some more DJ Swamp. We're going to listen to Artist and Killer. Again, go to inyourear.org for more details on the issues of media consolidation and ways that you can, as a consumer, as a citizen, fight back against corporate control of the airwaves.
Artist and killer, killer and artist.
Killer and artist.